Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We've had a couple of weeks off, so we've got some interesting things to talk about. Rafi, welcome back.
Great to be back. Glad all of the election cycle is behind us. Now we need to dig out from the aftermath of some of the failures of our current and hopefully soon to be former leaders and get the city back on track again.
Absolutely. So let's start out with talking about the consent decree and where we stand there.
Right. So this 13-year saga is rapidly approaching an end. And again, it may be delayed a little bit because of another political impasse, and that's the budget crisis on the federal level, in which government's been shut down. But let me, talk about the significance of the consent decree and remind the audience of where we started, what's been accomplished, and what's going to happen next. So after Hurricane Katrina, there was a lot of fallout, including some of the cases that emerge, including the Danziger Bridge massacre that occurred during Katrina and the aftermath of Katrina. The Department of Justice launched a probe in 2011 to determine if the New Orleans Police Department was engaging in a pattern and practice of excessive force. So their investigation concluded that, in fact, the department was using excessive force, was engaging in unconstitutional stops, searches, and seizures, and was practicing discriminatory policing. The result of that investigation in 2012 led Mayor Mitch Landrieu to enter into a consent decree with the Department of Justice, which is basically a contract between the City of New Orleans and the Department of Justice, in which the city agreed that over 400 areas needed to be addressed to make the police department be in compliance with constitutional policing standards. So that consent decree was signed in 2012 and went into effect in January of 2013. And since then, the New Orleans Police Department has been measuring and documenting their compliance with the department's own internal standards, policies, and procedures. And that was going along very, very well. In fact, in April of 2021, the court concluded that the department was in substantive compliance with 16 of the 18 major areas, with only two areas left to maintain or achieve compliance. So it looked like we were on a path to see this consent decree terminated or dissolved. late in 2021, possibly in early of 2022. So what ended up happening is that we started to see crime go up, and the city, led by the mayor, decided that for political reasons, I believe, to blame the increase in crime on the consent decree, saying that the consent decree was forcing the police department not to be aggressive enough in policing the city. And it was the consent decree's fault that crime was starting to increase in the city. And it was the consent decree that was handcuffing the department's ability to address crime. So in August of 22, the mayor ordered the city attorney's office to initiate litigation to terminate the consent decree. So between April of 21 and the end of 22, the city started drifting away from the consent decree, meaning that they stopped managing the department based on their compliance with the consent decree. And as they drifted away from the consent decree, we saw crime continue to go up. And the relationship, in my opinion, between crime going up and noncompliance with the consent decree is the consent decree is supposed to make sure that the police department is following their own rules, policies, and procedures. And their rules, policies, and procedures are critically important because if the police department doesn't follow their own rules, then they start to develop a distrust with the community. And if you don't have the community's trust, you cannot be an effective crime-fighting force. So the department started drifting away from some of the principles that they had spent the better part of 10 years in achieving. And we started to see crime go up. And it really, the real reason that crime went up is because I think during COVID, the police department shifted their policies from proactive policing to just responding to calls for service, meaning that crimes are already committed. And they were attempting to respond to those crimes, but they couldn't respond quickly enough because the numbers of officers declined. So as the numbers of officers declined in the city, the police department became incapable of responding to crime. And since they were no longer engaging in proactive policing, meaning that the police were trained and prior to COVID were utilizing their training to identify people carrying illegal weapons, doing traffic enforcement. Traffic enforcement was important to identify people that are wanted. So if you do a traffic stop and you find out that the person that you pulled over for a traffic violation, in fact, has a felony warrant for their arrest, you discover drugs and guns, you start to make those arrests, and those individuals that are arrested aren't on the streets to commit crime. They also stop doing narcotics enforcement. And everyone knows the connection between the open-air drug markets and guns and violence in the community. So they stopped doing all of that during COVID, and all they started to do was respond to calls for service, meaning that as the numbers of officers declined, it took longer for them to get there, the solve rate goes down, and the offenders that were being taken off the streets by proactive policing were no longer being taken off the streets. So we started to see crime go back up, and the mayor blamed it on the consent decree. And so what ended up happening is that in 2023, there was a PIB investigation involving the mayor's bodyguard, Jeffrey Vappi. The federal monitor reviewed PIB's investigation of that and concluded that the city of New Orleans was not in compliance with the consent decree with respect to the way that that investigation was handled. It appears that there was meddling on the part of the mayor. and improper disbursement of privileged information by the city attorney's office. The judge in the federal consent decree conducted a hearing and was on the cusp of finding the police department and the city of New Orleans in violation of the consent decree and was considering imposing sanctions on the city of New Orleans when Ann Kirkpatrick stepped in as the superintendent. And she assured the judge that the police department would begin to comply with the provisions of the consent decree. Ann Kirkpatrick's involvement in stepping into this mess put the police department back on track to achieve compliance with the consent decree and averted the city being held in contempt of court and sanctioned for the way that the PID investigation involving Jeffrey Vapi was being handled. So Ann Kirkpatrick was the adult in the room. And after Ann Kirkpatrick came back, we started to see the police department once again conduct proactive policing. We started to see crime go down. We started to see compliance with the consent decree go up, proving that constitutional policing and crime abatement are not mutually exclusive events, that they can, in fact, be compatible and self-supporting and mutually reinforcing. So what has happened in October of this year is that Judge Morgan signed an order indicating that if the Department of Justice and the City of New Orleans file a joint motion to dissolve the consent decree, she would, in fact, grant that motion if the case is assigned back to her from the federal Fifth Circuit court. So what's going to happen is sometime in November, you know, if we can figure a way to get the courtroom open because of the federal budget freeze that's in place and shut down, at that hearing, the judge will dissolve the consent decree. So it's not a question of if, it's a matter of when. And when the judge in January of 25 placed the police department into the substantial compliance phase, meaning that over the last 2 years of the consent decree, if they maintain compliance, the consent decree was scheduled to go away. But when the judge acknowledged that the city was in substantial compliance to enter this final phase, she indicated in January that she would consider terminating or dissolving the consent decree early if the police department maintained compliance. So in October, some 10 months after the judge placed the police department into substantial compliance, the judge announced that if the Department of Justice and the city presented a joint motion to the court, she would in fact dissolve the consent decree. And that consent decree was basically a contract between the city of New Orleans and the Department of Justice. If both of those parties are in agreement that the city of New Orleans and the police department are in substantial compliance, then the judge is not going to stand in the way of maintaining the consent decree based on the fact that the judge certified that the department was in substantial compliance and was merely applying the contract that was approved and implemented in 2013, saying that there was a 2-year wind down period. So 10 months into that 2-year wind down period, the judge is saying that she's satisfied, if both of the parties are satisfied, that the department is in substantial compliance and will in fact dissolve the consent decree as early as next month if the court can be reopened and a hearing can be rescheduled. So that's an accomplishment for the people of the city of New Orleans, for the men and women of the police department that have worked, you know, for the better part of 13 years to turn the culture of the police department around. It's turned around, and that's being reflected in our crime rates that we're seeing. So this is a different department, a better department, because of the consent decree, and this is a really notable accomplishment that this, you know, the men and women of this department have worked so hard for so long to achieve, and I just wanted to make sure that everyone realizes where we started, where we are today, and, you know, appreciates what's been accomplished with respect to this this 13-year saga.
Yep, absolutely. 13 years, long time, and a lot of money. And this comes, timing is everything. And obviously, they don't need to be spending any more money on this. And I guess we would be remiss if we didn't thank Judge Susie Morgan as well. We didn't always agree with what Judge Susie Morgan was doing. But these are all these difficult cases. We can agree to disagree. But thank her for moving this forward as well. We'll be right back, and when we return, we'll talk about the Louisiana Judiciary Commission and the Supreme Court addressing the conduct of judges. Some very interesting cases out there we'll talk about when we return.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, next up, we're going to talk about the Judiciary Commission and the Louisiana Supreme Court. And I know you're going to lay out this complaint process. I was looking at it earlier in last night, actually. It's a long process here.
It's too long. You know, but again, you know, this is the process. So when a citizen believes that a judge has violated the judicial canons, they can file a complaint with the Louisiana Judiciary Commission. And I'm going to go over what the process is, you know. So from the time that a complaint is actually received by the Office of Special Counsel, you know, which is the investigative arm and prosecutorial arm of judicial complaints, the Office of Special Counsel screens the complaint. That screening process takes 2 to 4 months. If they believe that there is some indications of a violation of a judicial canon, they will request a response from the judge, and then they will review the judge's response to that complaint. And that could take another 3 to 6 months. Based on the complaint and the judge's response, then the Office of Special Counsel decides if they're going to move forward with an investigation. That could take 6 to 18 months, depending on what their investigation confirms. It'll be scheduled for a hearing before a hearing officer. That could take another 6 to 12 months. Then the recommendations of the hearing officer are scheduled for a hearing before the full commission. That could take another 3 to 9 months. And then the findings of the commission are recommended to the Supreme Court, and that could take another 3 to 6 months. So we're going to talk about 4 rookie judges that either during their campaign or during their first year on the bench violated judicial canons. These judges are now all coming up for re-election next year. So from the time that these complaints were filed till today, you know, we're looking at 3+ years that these complaints have been winding their way through this process. And, you know, I wanted to give, you know, the audience a little update on what's going on. So just a few weeks ago, New Orleans Civil District Court Judge Jennifer Medley was recommended for sanctions by the Supreme Court, was sanctioned by the Supreme Court, actually. So she, Judge Medley, admitted to mistakes made during her campaign when she was running for the judgeship. She acknowledged that she approved multiple political attacks on her opponent that were false and misleading. She also confirmed that she funneled a $100,000 loan from a donor into her campaign against state law, which is a violation of the canons. The Office of Special Counsel attorney was quoted in his arguments before the hearing officer saying, "We're here today. We have a judge who is only a judge based on a campaign that involved repeated deceptive and false claims." They recommended that Judge Medley receive a year-long unpaid suspension. The Supreme Court placed her on a 30-day suspension and ordered her to pay $2,700 to cover the cost of the investigation. That's one rookie judge. Second rookie judge in the recent past that was just sanctioned was Chick Foray, judge in Jefferson Parish. Judiciary Commission found that Judge Foray violated 8 judicial canons, primarily over several reported outbursts in his first year on the bench. The commission cited a pattern of inappropriate judicial demeanor. And October the 15th, the Supreme Court suspended Judge Foray for 30 days without pay. So those are the most recent two. There's 2 judges from Baton Rouge. Again, these are all rookie judges in their first term. Judge Ebony Johnson Rose, Baton Rouge judge, was elected in December of 20, took the bench in 2021. And after the investigation and hearings, the Louisiana Supreme Court suspended Judge Johnson Rose and determined that she was a substantial threat to posing harm to the public, and took the drastic step of temporarily removing her while the investigation was underway. She was found to have violated the canons and given a 6-month suspension, waiving all but 2 months of it. So instead of 6 months, she was suspended. She was only actually suspended for 2 months, placed on probation for 2 years, ordered to repay over $11,000 for the cost of the investigation, and to pay almost $7,000 for the cost of the judge that was required to sit and preside over Judge Rose's docket while she was removed from the bench. So while she was removed, Judge Johnson Rose cost taxpayers $160,000 in salary and for the replacement judge. So she got her salary, and she also had to, you know, the taxpayers had to pay for another judge to preside over cases. So $160,000 in taxpayer cost. And the Supreme Court only sanctioned her to the tune of 2 months of suspension, probation for 2 years, and about $18,000 in cost that she was being assigned to this. And then the fourth judge is another Baton Rouge rookie judge, Judge Tiffany Foxworth Roberts. She was accused of behavior during the campaign of being dishonest about her prior military service and being untruthful about an insurance claim that she filed involving a diamond ring. So the Office of Special Counsel recommended that she be removed from the bench. The Judiciary Commission has recommended removal. And last week, the Supreme Court heard arguments as to why the judge should be removed, but they have not yet issued their ruling on this. And maybe in the near future, we'll learn what the Supreme Court attempted to do or decided to do in this particular case. But all of these are cases involving first-term judges who are paid almost $175,000 a year. All of them received their salaries during the first 3 years of their term of office. Many of these individuals were suspended and removed from the bench for periods of time that resulted in the Supreme Court appointing another judge to preside over their docket while they were suspended with pay, only increasing the cost to taxpayers in all of this. So we're looking at, you know, a situation where the I think the public needs to recognize their important role in electing qualified individuals to the bench. You're looking at four first-term judges that violated judicial canons. And historically, the turnout for judicial elections are abysmal in this state. You may be looking at, if there's a runoff, there may be a 10 to 15% of the registered voters showing up to vote, meaning that in many respects, we're getting individuals elected to the bench that aren't suitable and aren't qualified to serve. And this is the result of some of the voter apathy that we see.
These cases need to be wrapped up sooner. They're too lengthy. I mean, they're more than halfway through their term of office because these judges get elected to six-year terms, right, before they ever have the sanction at that point in time. It seems as though they'd be able to conduct these investigations a lot quicker than what they're doing
right now. All of these people come up for re-election next fall.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. When we come back, we'll talk about felony case dockets from January to October of 2025 in the Criminal District Court.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. you'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. You will recall that they recently released a report on where judges stood relative to their dockets, and there was they uncovered some unbelievable things that were going on there. But a lot has changed. Tell us about it, Rafi.
Right. So in April, as you just stated, we issued a report documenting the size of every judge's docket in the court. So there are 12 felony sections of court. Cases are randomly allotted to each section of court. So the workload is equally and evenly distributed. And what we took a look at was how many cases each judge had in their open inventory. And we found that with 11 of the 12 judges, it's pretty pretty tight pattern of cases, where, you know, the court averaged about 230 some odd open cases, with one exception, Section J. They had over 400 cases. So our report was issued on April the 15th. Shortly after our report was released, officials from the Louisiana Supreme Court went to Judge Daryl Durbiney, the judge that presides over Section J, and asked him to account for and explain why his inventory was so large. The day after that inquiry by the Supreme Court received a letter from Judge Durbiney, indicated that he was requesting medical leave to step away from the bench. And when he stepped away from the bench, the Supreme Court appointed an ad hoc judge to preside over his docket. That was in May of this year. When he stepped away from his docket, he had over 460 cases open pending in his section of court. The other sections of court averaged 236 cases. So an ad hoc was appointed, and in August of this year, Judge Durbiney submitted his official notice of retirement. So he has, you know, stepped away officially. He's not returning to the bench. He's retired. He's receiving his judicial pension. And there is a judge that has been presiding over this docket. The docket that was at 469 cases in May is now down to 232 cases today. So it shows you that the key to maintaining, you know, a docket that is within the normal parameters just requires that judge show up and do their job while they're at work. That wasn't happening with Judge Durbiney. This wasn't a complaint with the Louisiana Judiciary Commission. It took essentially 1 month from the time that we framed this issue until the time Judge Durbiney stepped away, and the Supreme Court immediately appointed an ad hoc to step in there and begin to deliver justice in Section J. And just since May of this year, we've seen the docket decrease by over 100%, which is, you know, an accomplishment. And that is, you know, the expectation of, you know, a judge when they're elected to the bench to preside over their open inventory and, you know, administer justice in the state of Louisiana. That wasn't happening in Section J, and it hadn't been happening, and Judge Durbany would still be there if we had not issued that report in April. So what's been accomplished in a relatively short period of time is, I think, a win for the people of the city of New Orleans, a win for the image of the judiciary, because one judge was tainting the public's perception of that court based on his lack of effort. And, you know, to the credit of the Supreme Court, if they had not stepped in and asked the judge to begin to explain why his inventory was out of whack with the rest of the court, probably still be there, and that docket wouldn't be 469 cases. It'd probably be about 569 cases by now. So this is an accomplishment and an achievement, and I think it's a testament to the ad hoc judges that have been appointed there, Judge Calvin Johnson, and now currently Judge Franz Ziblich. They rolled up their sleeves, went to work, and their work, their hard work, is being confirmed by the numbers of open cases pending in Section J now.
And thankfully, the court acted quickly, right? Because had they followed the previous model that we talked about with disciplinary of these other judges, it could have gone on for another 2 years.
So judges have due process when a complaint is filed against them. This, we didn't file a complaint. We just made this information public. The Supreme Court took the information that we documented, and they have supervisory authority over the court. They asked the judge to explain why his docket was, and he didn't elect to respond. He elected to request a medical leave, meaning that he couldn't defend, and he realized where this was going, and at least he did the right thing. But he wouldn't have done the right thing if this information wasn't made publicly available, and the Supreme Court would not have been aware of the dire straits of that section of court were it not for our report that we released in April of this year.
Let's pivot to the last of our topics. WalletHub puts out an analysis last week that said that New Orleans is the least safe city in all of America. Tell us about this study.
So when I saw that, I started to take a look at that because, you know, I'm a numbers guy. I track the numbers, and I see that crime has been going down consistently. And we started looking into the metrics that they applied. And, you know, I wanted to share with you and the audience some of the things that we found. So with respect to the metrics that they apply, they apply natural disasters, and they rated Houston as the worst, having the worst or the highest risk of a natural disaster, and Juneau, Alaska being the safest. But natural disasters are essentially hurricanes and flooding and earthquakes and wildfires and things like that. They also rate cities by financial safety risk, and they include unemployment rates and people being uninsured and poverty statistics, but it doesn't say how current the information is that they're relying that on. And the thing that got my attention was, you know, when they're one of the other areas, they talk about crime statistics, and they indicated that they base their crime statistics off of FBI reported records. So I checked the last time the New Orleans Police Department submitted any UCR, Uniform Crime Reporting Statistics, to the FBI was 2023. So the crime statistics that the NOPD submitted to the FBI for 2023 were the most recent published statistics that they were basing this on. So this is two-year-old statistics that were used. 2023, you know, our crime rate was substantially higher than what it is today. Homicides were over 40% higher. Virtually every category of violent crime was 40+% higher in 2023 than what it is today. So they were using out-of-date crime statistics to determine the crime rate. They also gave bonus points, making New Orleans less safe, because they determined that we had a terrorist attack in January. So we got an additional hit for the fact that there was a terrorist attack in the city. So despite the fact that there was a terrorist attack in the city in January of this year, we're seeing that our crime rate across the board is down in every major category, despite the fact that there were 14 homicides that occurred pursuant to that attack. So this Wallet Hub chart may be interesting. It's great for clicks and, you know, getting people's attention, but it's a hodgepodge of data. And I didn't begin to look at 180 plus cities to determine, you know, what data that they use. Just their my review of the data that they were using with the city of New Orleans, they're looking at the terrorist attack from 2025. They're marrying that together with crime statistics from 2023. I have no idea what years they're looking at to determine what some of the financial safety risk were or natural disasters data that they looked at. So, you know, this story is something that, you know, is being picked up by the local media here, and it looks bad for the city of New Orleans, and I'm not defending. I still think that crime is unacceptably high here, but I believe that, you know, the metrics that were applied in this hodgepodge and patchwork of picking and choosing some of the statistics and numbers really is a disservice to the city of New Orleans and doesn't accurately reflect what's been accomplished over the last couple of years.
Yeah, like what strategy can we deploy to avoid natural disaster risk?
Well, I mean, you know,
if they've got a tool that we can utilize to make a storm turn, please give it to us.
Right.
We'll take it and move forward. As always, a lot of great information. Thank you so much for the update on a number of topics that we have covered for quite a long time. 13-year saga on the consent decree is one example. For sure. Rafi Goyeneche, President of Metropolitan Crime Commission, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Happy Halloween.
Thank you, sir. You as well. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.